You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59 a.m. Stay tuned for more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste.
KBOO Community Radio wants to hear from you, our dear listeners and members, about why you support KBOO, why you listen, and why others should support the radio station. Please call 503-231-8032, extension 302, and tell us your name, what KBOO means to you, and why do you continue to support KBOO. Again, that's 503-231-8032, extension 302. Thank you for supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Boys Who Said No, a documentary film screening on Saturday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. During the Vietnam War, draft resistors openly refused military service to draw others to oppose the war. The Boys Who Said No is a documentary film featuring interviews with resistors and historians. Individuals featured include folk singer and activist Joan Baez, resistance leader David Harris, Cleveland Sellers of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and Muhammad Ali. Again, that's The Boys Who Said No, screening Saturday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Today is September 9th, 2019, and you are listening to your community radio station, KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I am grateful for your presence here and joining us.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And you're listening to KBOO at 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 in points east along the Columbia River Gorge, along the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3, and KBOO Portland comes in strong at KBOO.fm.
Hey, and who are you?
Well, I am the disembodied voice. I'm the voice of conscience. I am Celeste Carey, your co-host.
Hey, well, disembodied voice, spirit, or however you exist. Grateful for your presence here. So, Celeste, I spent last night doing some homework about our program today.
Yes. What'd you think about those articles?
Oh. No, that was what I read this morning, the articles. I had to actually watch the movie.
Oh, okay, so you watch Equanimity?
No, I watch, what is it, Sticks and Bones or Sticks and Stones?
Sticks and Stones, you know, but words will never, they say.
Yeah, so yeah, we're talking about the comedian, social commentator, David Chappelle, who... many of you might remember him from what was a comedy special in the early 2000s, and he has a periodic stand-up comedy routine that airs on a streaming
Netflix
service. And
you didn't want to say it.
Hey, they get enough advertisement.
That's true, they do.
And they are not contributing to
to KBOO.
Community radio station. So
that's right. We can say KBOO on the air.
All day we can say KBOO. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so he has these specials that are, as comedians, all good comedians, they should be controversial, don't you think?
I think that they should be controversial, they should be pot stirrers, they should stimulate and provoke deep thinking about human nature, societal issues, cultural issues, human interaction, all of that.
So, you know, when I was watching him and, you know, the way you described it, I said, well, is he like a Lenny Bruce or Tony Fields, or we can go down the list of
Richard Pryor, George Carlin.
Yeah. Name some female.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of one that does more of a broader area. There was Paula Poundstone,
yeah,
back in the day, and there's Eliza, there's Amy Wong, Baby Cobra. She can be a little deadly with some of her commentary, but I guess all of them do talk a bit about their personal life as it reflects the larger community. So yeah, those are some of them.
Of some of the social commentators, comedians, and as you might be well aware of, and some of the controversy in terms of the target. I don't like that word. Some of the individuals or communities that are the focus of his piece, and of course there is some controversy about that, as it ought to be. And you know, one comment he says in this latest special is, it doesn't matter what I say, and if you are at home watching this S on, and he names the streaming service, mm-hmm, remember, B, you clicked on my face. So
indeed, he said that.
So the option always is, if you don't like what I'm saying, you don't have to watch me, which I think might be not a proper response. It's sort of like an easy way, and sort of like, nah, I can still say what I say, and I think it skirts the real issue, or a issue that people might have about some of these stand-up comedians.
I agree. But by the same token, when a mirror is held up to us and somebody renders their perception of us, sometimes it's not pretty. Sometimes it really stings. And like the proverbial sticks and stones, you know, we may try to act like these words don't hurt, but they do strike deep. They do leave some bruises, and we have to determine whether these are bruises that are undeserved, or whether these bruises bring us out of our heady mixture of self-exaltation and lack of humor.
So how do we balance these things? I must admit that while watching this special, I did laugh at parts. Some parts I was really offended,
mm-hmm,
and I had to get up I paused it actually, and sort of like, this is not good.
Was it painful, not good, or was it word we use in church when we talk about being pricked in our spirit? There's a word, I can't think of it right now.
It wasn't that one.
Okay.
it didn't make me want to say, good Lord, deliver me, or anything like that. It was painful. And I think part of it was sort of like what we shared yesterday when we were talking about this. The object of his of his words, he was somewhat defensive of celebrity, and there was this whole spew where he's talking about, you know, a celebrity, I forgot what the words he used, but sort of like it's the season in which everyone goes after celebrities, and he defended some comedians
he did.
Who were offensive, but
and problematic.
What do you mean?
I said, and some of these celebrities that he has defended have been problematic in and of themselves.
Right. And just let me finish point. And so he defended some of the celebrity, and what I found painful were the communities, the marginalized communities that he went after. So, you know, you can say whatever you want about famous money people, but when you attack communities, then marginalize oppressed communities, that's when I feel, it's not so funny.
Yeah, that's true, and it's not conviction. That's what the word
conviction.
Was.
Yeah, right.
It is not a matter of conviction. It's a matter of, okay, is this causing somebody harm? Real harm. I mean, sometime I think it was either earlier this. No, I think it was last year. We tackled. We had a show where we tackled the concept of trigger words.
Yes.
And we talked about the fact that these words do have real harm, and they do have real implications for damage. Reality for damage, and so it's not a matter of being what we hear in the conservative media of being a snowflake, somebody who can't stand the heat, but it's a matter of recognizing that we do have speech that's designed to denigrate and demean people and to make them feel less than an other. Well, even worse than other, just less than. And so we have to strike a balance between what is funny and thought-provoking and even convicting versus mean-spirited. But the complaints, however, have been that the progressive community, the left-leaning community, seems to possibly have lost its sense of humor.
And something like that makes me say, because I think a lot of those, one of the articles you shared with me stated that it's of concern when the wrong type of people, find it humorous.
Yeah.
And so when you see right-wing folks, Breitbart and other things, defend David Chappelle, that should say, what's going on here?
Well, indeed. And plus, if you follow David Chappelle's trajectory, you know there was a point after he had done his wildly popular show that he was going through, I guess, castigation by the powers that be because he wouldn't kowtow to them. And he even went so far, if you look at some of his videos online, to say that, you know, the powers that be, the elites, and by elites he means the highly placed, higher than 1% elites, had earmarked him as a troublemaker. Yet in this video, Sticks and Stones, it seems as though he's kowtowing to the very people that, whose hand he ostensibly bit earlier. You know, he's kowtowing to these folks. And so, you know, I get suspicious. Now, I watched Equanimity as well. And Equanimity, I think, was kind of leading up to this, where he discussed the cancel culture and issues that he fleshed out more in Sticks and Stones. So I feel that this, not necessarily a long time coming, but it was foreshadowed. I think he treated people a little bit more fairly in Equanimity, and the name is ironic, you know. But I want to ask our listeners, what do you think? How do you think we should strike a balance? Do you think a balance is necessary? Do you think he's performing a critical, positive service to society as a whole? Do you think the marginalized folks have been unfairly treated, or do you think we on the progressive slash left-leaning side have lost a sense of humor? What do you think?
Our number is 503-231-8187. We encourage you to give us a call, and let's go to a caller who's been waiting. Camilo, good morning.
Good morning, Camilo.
Good morning. I hope that you don't mind if I pivot from the direction that you're going in.
Please.
Well, I think I can make some connections. I think that you're talking about communication, and I would like to talk about that, not necessarily in the context of this specific comedian. If that's
okay.
All right with you,
yes, go ahead.
I want to continue with the last segment of Democracy Now, where they were talking about the Bahamas and the failure of the news media to discuss climate change, why this is not being communicated widely. The speaker said that what we need is we need to have more honest representation from the meteorologists, so we need to have actual scientists making the presentation.
Yes, go ahead. Are you finished?
I've only just got started.
I know. I just wanted to put a pause there, and for those who were unable to hear it, what I found the Democracy Now, what I found troubling, and probably I should have known this, is sort of like the scientists or the lack of scientific pushback from meteorologists about this, about the inability to speak about the danger of climate change.
This is what I want to discuss. Mm-hmm. So hear me out. First of all, I want to mention a specific academic article called Deep Adaptation by Jem Bendel. And in this article, he discusses the fact that even the scientists are not communicating clearly about what is really going on with climate change. Mm-hmm. The point being that if you pay attention to the data, you have to accept the fact that there's very little that we can actually do about climate change, and the consequences of climate change are economic, ecological, and social collapse, and that this will happen within our lifetimes.
Yes.
And this is something that even the scientists do not want to speak about. And he wrote this article so that we can at least begin to have some discussion about what the reality is, how it impacts us, how it affects us emotionally, spiritually, and what can we do to prepare for this inevitability. And you know, the fact that we're not discussing this, the fact that we're in the climate movement focusing on actions rather than looking at the reality, I think deserves discussion. And I wonder what our listeners think about this, and if people are aware of how serious the situation is, and the complete lack of any really meaningful discussion about it. It's beginning to grow. There are forums on deep adaptation. People are starting to talk about it, but not very many people are.
Well, first, Camilo, can I get the name of that author again of the article?
It's Jem, J-E-M,
Bendel,
B-E-N-D-E-L-L, and you can look up on Google and get the reference and download the article and read it yourself, and I hope that you would do that.
I would, and I would like to devote another segment to discussing it. One of the things that I've been doing, because I don't get to watch much TV, so I've been reading a lot more of my news, and I've been just going through all kinds of different news outlets, from conservative to progressive to international, and reading a lot about issues with climate change. So it catches me a little bit off guard, because depending on who you read, you are feeling like you're getting some discussions about this. I mean, one of the things that I've seen is how there's at least 70,000 Bahamians that are unhoused and wondering where's the future, and the places of habitation, you know, towns and what have you, are totally devastated. And so, you know, I feel like I am getting this, but I do understand you're talking about a broader level of communication. And to that, I'd like to say we would really like to have some time to prepare for this and talk about it, because it is important to hear what kinds of planning we as, you know, human beings on the face of the planet should be doing to not only take care of ourselves but our neighbors, but also to combat the disinformation and ignorance that's coming out of our leadership. Because when you have a president doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on the fact that Alabama was supposed to be hit and all the implications of that, as opposed to more about what planning we should do, it gets frightening. And, you know, we got to realize we're being, what's the word, let them eat cake, as well as kind of hoodwinked.
I think the point that you're making about this being frightening is really the key message, because what has happened in the Bahamas is indeed very frightening, and it speaks about what is going to happen more and more. And I think one of the explanations for the failure of scientists even to speak about this is that it's very scary, and people don't want to hear how serious this is. And I mean, I'll admit that I have been depressed for the past couple of weeks and not really able to function because of being so distressed over this. And I have to come to grips with this. And I think the first step that we have to take, how to come to grips with the emotional, spiritual, psychological response to realizing that we are literally in a war, and a war that is going to be devastating.
So Camilla, are you saying, I recognize that certainly we individual communities have to deal with the impact or our inability to really confront these issues, but are you also saying that scientists are unable to communicate these facts to us?
That's what Jim Bendel has written about in his book, in his article. He cites a article that came out in New York Magazine that was unvarnished and discussed all of these, and then how it was criticized for being too blunt.
Well, you know, like I said, I think we should devote a segment to this, do our research, and see if we can get somebody to give us some insight on this. I think that's a very good point, and that's going down on the to-do list the to-do show.
Call me and I'll come on the program and talk about it.
That would be excellent.
Make sure you give the board operator your contact information, and we will do that.
Okay.
Hey, thank you so much, Camilo. And hey, I was stuck in this article that you just mentioned, Deep Adaptation, a Map for Navigating Climate Tragedy. Jim Bendel, and then let's focus more detail on this. Thank you so much for raising this with us.
Yeah.
And let's us remind that you are listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. Coming up, following this program at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. After that is Locus Focus. At 11 is First Voices Radio. And don't forget, you can listen to all of your favorite KBOO programming by going to kboo.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. Our numbers here for those who wish to be a part of our conversations of 503-231-8187. We began our conversation this morning by talking about comedians and their ability to have an impact on culture, and whether or not some things are beyond the pale of humor. Our last caller raised the issue of addressing more in a more concerted effort climate change and the impact on all of us.
Especially our psychological and emotional impact.
So those are two things that we would consider. That is one we want to explore more and want all of you to look at Jim Bendell, J-E-M-B-E-N-D-E-L-L, and do your research, and we will delve more deeply into that at a later program. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we will, I think we have another caller online.
Good morning, caller.
No, we don't.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, we would encourage folks to call. And, you know, this sounds provocative, and to a degree, I do mean it, you know, as a provocation. But have we lost our sense of humor, or perhaps are we becoming more sensitive to the fact that it's not helpful to society as a whole to have whipping posts,
right now? You know, this I think we all might agree with that. There was this one part in this this comedian we were talking about in this routine where he's talking about some problems he had with an executive from, I think, his former TV program about what words you can use and what words are inappropriate. And then there was the one was the N-word, and one was the the F-word, referring to gay people. And he goes up, you know, he's called up to the headquarters of the office or whatever, and saying, you know, Mrs. Chappelle, you can't really use that F word because you're not a
member of that group.
Of that. And his his response to, well, you know, I'm not an N either, and you don't say I can't use that word. But those are some of the issues we face. We have one caller online. Let's go to Christy, who has some insights for us this morning. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to comment on your Chappelle Show commentary.
No.
So did you guys both watch it?
I watched Equanimity, and Cecil watched Sticks and Stones, and I've watched parts of Sticks and Stones. I didn't want to get too tainted.
So I watched Sticks and Stones a couple nights ago, and I had read a lot about it on social media before I actually watched it, so I was sort of prepared.
Yeah.
And sort of.
Yes.
And, yes.
I've always liked him, and I loved his original show, and I kind of followed when he had his breakdown, which I thought was kind of great that he kind of did it sort of publicly and said, you know, the system is really difficult and failed. But I thought his show was interesting because he sort of took a machine gun approach to everything.
Yes.
Like it wasn't that I thought, I don't think he necessarily deserved all the criticism that he got.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think, I think people got his intentions mixed up. You know, they were kind of, they sort of want to lump him into the category of like, oh, he's just a hater like everybody else, you know, and all of a sudden he's on Fox News, you know, and I thought that was kind of unfair that he was getting that treatment. And I thought that his critiques, you know, he had some pretty valid critiques that popped up, that he had like a good thing going for a minute. You know, he was talking about disarming white people. I mean, he had a good little segment about that, which I thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
When he started defending Michael Jackson and Louis C.K. and sort of defending those people, I thought it was kind of interesting. And people really, I don't know if you, what your opinion was about the Michael Jackson thing or whether you have any opinions of it at all, but that little piece was pretty active on social media. People really wanted to like jump down his throat about that. And I started reading more about the whole Michael Jackson thing just because I just knew what the news had portrayed. And it's kind of, in, you know, he sort of opened a door for people to talk about, was Michael Jackson really this horrible person that everybody said he was, or did the media just really conspire to take him down? And his comment on the fact that the people who are now suing him, these two men who are accusing him of things, you know, he's dead. He's been dead for a long time. And these two people are just suing his estate, and they will make a lot of money off of it. And however you feel about that, those are really interesting points that people don't really bring up.
Well, you know, one thing, what I thought was interesting, because it's my take on that, was sort of like it was very easy for him to defend the celebrities, child molesters and people accused of terrible things, and yet he found it easier to attack very marginalized trans community, and that was
which exactly. And I actually found, but that's why I think when you're watching it, it's like I use the term machine gun approach, but it really was like, you know, you can kind of listen to him talk about something for a minute, and then he talks about something else, and you feel like you're getting punched in the face. And you're like, oh my God, he's really doing, like, right. And I think your point about that is exactly right. And he did seem to find it pretty easy to, and I don't really understand. I mean, I guess I understand when his motivation for taking on marginalized communities, feeling like I don't know what his point was.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I find interesting is that not only do I look at it as him holding up a mirror, but I look at it kind of a meta view of the whole thing, in which he is acting out as a human being who is in this and of it. He is acting out the very types of dynamics we are going through by having this dialogue or this monologue or however you want to call it. You know, the fact that he's talking about it shows how it affects us. And like, I was kind of, I don't want to say amused or perplexed, but I guess I'll call it bemused by the fact that defending CK was a little bit confusing to me, because once again, this is a person who's been accused and has to a degree admitted doing some of this stuff. So where does this defense come from, and is he kowtowing to the very powers that caused him to have his breakdown?
Well, true, but I also get the feeling that his whole point of the whole show was, you know, people keep using the term cancel culture, like, we don't like your behavior,
yeah,
so we're going to
cancel
you, we're not going to watch anything you've ever done, which I think maybe after all is said and done, his whole show, that's what it was all about, like, what can you do in this society and get away with? What can you say, who can you criticize, or who can you, you know, whatever, in front of, you know, and get accused of something? But I keep thinking about, I don't think that Chappelle necessarily dislikes white people, like, I never really got that from him, but I do think that was sort of an underlying current. And I honestly think that when he's, and this is maybe my perception, when he was going against marginalized people, I think that's who he had in his mind. You know what I mean? I think he had, you know, LGBTQ white people in his mind when he was going through that. That's sort of the impression that I got.
You get that impression, too, from watching Equanimity. I don't know if you've seen that one or not.
I didn't see that one.
You get that impression that he's really talking about the privileged folks who decide to put on disadvantage and decide to wear marginalism, even though they might have a tangential, you know, relationship with that. But, you know, I don't think people want to hear that, because if he's pointing out the white people who are can dip in and out of marginalized communities, you know, then by association he's talking about all of the marginalized communities. And so I think you bring up a really important point, that he's talking about those who can pass for privilege and aren't necessarily all the way immersed in marginalized communities too.
One thing he does in this latest thing where he talks about, and he called LGBTQ community, where I think he does a really great thing in terms of analyzing the power dynamics within the queer community.
Yeah, and I thought that was one of the best. That was one of the best things that he did. I thought just kind of as a funny, like, yeah, as people interacting with each other.
Yeah.
So you know, it's like how we get upset about Stonewall being appropriated, you know, because those who know the history know that this was a black and Latin gay club, primarily men, and so these are the people who were the face of Stonewall and the spark for the liberation effort, but it's been whitewashed, and I don't mean that as a metaphor.
Well, whitewash, right, and male wash when trans women of color were prominent. But that's...
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The last thing
I wanted to say about Chappelle, and I do think that his take on white people is maybe the undercurrent with, like we were just saying, about a lot of what he does. But did you see the Saturday Night Live episode right after the election?
Yes.
With him and Chris Rock. I think it's Chris Rock, right?
Yeah,
and they're standing in that living room behind the white people who are watching Trump get elected, and I think it's one of the funniest things he's ever done, and I think explains a lot about his take on things, because they're watching these white people be horrified, how could this happen, and oh my God, you know, and they're just looking at each other like, really, you didn't know?
you should see Equanimity, then you would appreciate that, because he talks a little bit about that when he goes to vote.
Okay.
I think you'll appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. Well, thank you
for your commentary.
You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio. Today is Monday, September 2019. And we're taking a break from seeing what horrible things the President of the United States is doing or not doing, and who he invites or disinvites from Camp David. And you mentioned his ability to alter maps and stuff like that. We're talking about how people respond to the world we live in. And one thing is cultural response, artistic response, and what are appropriate and inappropriate responses. We're using this, and we're using a comedian as a point of discussion, but you may expand it. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Lou, are you on the phone, and what are your thoughts?
Well, it sounds like you're trying to do kind of an alternate approach to the normal, deconstruction of political change. But in terms of comedy, I was curious, it sounds like Celeste and perhaps Cecil, both of you are experts on current comedians.
I would not call myself an expert. Let's not go there.
Do you remember the name? I don't. I know her name, but I don't know her name. Can't think of it. About the decapitated Trump head comedian thing. It sounds like that would fit what Chappelle talks about in terms of cancel culture. And do you think that was appropriate or not?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with...
I know who you're talking about. I'm trying to remember her name.
I know her name, too, but I can't think of it. But
yeah.
The idea of holding
Nancy
up...
Griffin.
A decapitated head of a politician.
Kathy Griffin?
Kathy.
Kathy, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Ingenious engineer.
Go ahead. You were saying, Lou?
Oh, just whether you thought that was an appropriately funny thing or not really, or doesn't matter, or is it part of cancel culture?
I have a different take on this. Part of it comes from my spiritual belief system, as well as the fact that I spent years in the medical profession working as a nurse. I don't like to see the human body desecrated.
Sure.
So even with a despot like Trump, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for us to show that as a means to an end.
Right.
You know, that's me personally. What would I tell other people? Well, I would share my beliefs. I would say, you know, I would like us as human beings to think of other ways of dealing with stuff. I'm not naive to warfare and killing and murder by any means. I'm just, you know, I find it distasteful to parade a dismembered head, you know, as a solution to our upset with somebody's political policies. So having said that, I wouldn't find it funny.
Sure. And a couple of comedians that that I'm somewhat aware of, and you can say where if you think it fits some of the stuff you're trying to talk about. Dennis Miller apparently went over to the right side and is still a comedian, and apparently also more consistently perhaps from the conservative side, trashes disenfranchised and vulnerable communities.
Yes.
And then I'm thinking also of Lenny Bruce a while ago. Lenny Bruce was perhaps the most, even before Richard Pryor, controversial comedian. I don't know if either of you have thoughts about either of those two comedian people.
Right. And also, I mean, you mentioned Dennis Miller and how he went over to the side of evil.
Sure, well, the Breitbart side, right.
Yeah. Right. But also you have this, what's the guy, not Dennis Miller, has an HBO show.
Bill Maher.
Yeah, and he had, he one time he was like very conservative, and then he went more libertarian. I don't know where he is now, but
he's always been libertarian, and he's always been against religion. So any reverends or pastors are his. I think his most recent controversy was about Muslim women and Trump trashing the four congressional representatives and saying that people who support Palestinian rights are really bad. And so the question then is, he's pretty smart, but maybe he doesn't do what Celeste is doing, which is do research. And you know, you can argue that comedians to some extent do the machine gun approach, that you know, they want to trash anything that's an available target. But it seems like it's more helpful. I'm thinking actually less of comedians than since we have a progressive film program at Portland State, then movies that are from the left perspective that are funny, that hopefully confirm the idea that the left has not lost its sense of humor. And I'm thinking of two or three. I'll just mention them and let you go.
Yeah, no, please. I want you
One is, there are two that are really great that are directed a while ago by Tim Robbins. One's called Bob Roberts. We showed it. People laughed at every joke all the way through. It's kind of a fictional story of a right-wing politician who is a folk singer and rewrites all of Woody Guthrie's songs so they support rich people.
And
at poor people, it's a satire, and Tim Robbins and his brother wrote the music, and they made it a rule that they would never publicize the songs so nobody can access them to make them serious right-wing songs. But it's a very funny, it's basically a stockbroker who's a folk singer and fakes his own assassination and gets elected in Pennsylvania Senate race. Gore Vidal plays the liberal Democrat he defeats. A second one he did was Cradle of Rock, which is about the Federal Theater Project in the 1930s, basically a true story, but it's also really funny in terms of the role of art and comedy. The other one I was thinking of, you both may have seen it, called Fear of a Black Hat, which is a satire of rap groups.
That came out of the 90s.
Sure. So I don't know if
you have... It was not just a satire about hip-hop and rap. It was a satire on black people, especially black men's place in society.
So, so thank you for lifting those up.
Sure, thank you.
In terms of, oh, don't say goodbye because I wanted to ask you a question. Okay. I wanted to ask you, and thank you for lifting up those voices of comedy from the left perspective to sort of like counteract the type of things we hear from right wingers who say, oh gosh, you leftists have no sense of humor and everything's just funny, and also recognizing that there are ways in which we can enjoy the full human emotions and be polite and considerate and insightful at the same time. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we invite your calls this morning and your comments.
Yeah. You know, I do want to say that those are some older comedies, and so it would make one wonder, well, where are our current well-balanced and funny progressive slash liberal slash left comedians or comedic efforts, you know?
What about the comedian who was at the, a female comedian who was ridiculed, you know, at the, not ridiculed, who spoke at the, what is it, the National Press Club, you know.
Oh,
the
yes, Admiral. I know who you're talking about. I can't remember her name. Her last name is Wolf.
But yes, and she was
I watched the entire thing. I thought some of the things she said were really funny. Yeah. I thought some of them, was a couple of them were a little tasteless.
But she was attacked, for those who don't know, she was attacked because of...
They said it was personal attacks.
Personal attacks, and particularly yeah. against, like, the president. And like
Sarah
that.
Huckabee.
Yes. So conservatives were dismayed or upset because of this woman comedian from... lack of a better term, from a progressive perspective, was attacking the powers that be.
Well, you know, the truth is that not only are there attacks from all sides, but there are also cancel cultures from all sides.
And define cancel culture.
By cancel culture, I hope I'm getting the zeitgeist of it, you know, the current meaning of it. It's people who don't like something and want to demand that you are canceled and removed and expunged from human memory, you know. So we, for example, had a segment on More Talk Radio when we talked about how do we look at the art of somebody like, say, Bill Cosby, when they've done what could be viewed as valuable art to one group, but overall there's concerns about their behavior and the harm that they're doing. How do you make a balance? So there are those who want to have anything that Bill Cosby has ever done expunged, removed from, well, human memory, you know. And then there are those who say, well, you know, R. Kelly did all these horrible things, but that song, that was an anthem, you know, and they want to ignore the things that have been done, or even blame some of the victims. Now, for those people who basically sold themselves or their children out to him, you know, that's deplorable, and I can understand some of what Dave Chappelle is talking about when he talks about elements of the Me Too culture, where people knowingly entered into the devil's bed, you know, and they wanted the fame and the fortune. But I also know that it's not fair to blame people who are helpless in making that decision, you know, did not have any say in making that decision to make that transaction. You know, it wasn't their choice, or they said, no, you know, on second thought, now that I see this, I don't want to be involved. And they've been ridiculed as if it was their choice to enter into some type of dynamic with these questionable folks.
Now, one thing about this term about cancel culture that I discovered in terms of the background of Dave Chappelle, because in 1990, Women of Antioch, a student group at Antioch College, and many of us know of this progressive small liberal arts college in Ohio, this women group demanded radical physical action because of on-campus rape, and they wanted a whole code of sexual conduct, requiring verbal consent, things that most of us today don't agree of without thinking. Of course, you need consent culture, but anyway, they raised this. These issues at Antioch College, and they became almost like a laughingstock for comedy shows like Saturday Night Live and stuff like that, about these, you know, liberals going overzealous board. And I did not know that David Chappelle's father was a professor at Antioch College, so that David Chappelle was, when this was rising up at that university, was a part of that as a teenager or whatever, but aware of what was going on around him. And some of his current comedy might have been in response to what he saw as an adolescent in that community.
Well, not only does he mention having grown up in Silver Springs, but he did a skit back in 2004. It was a sketch called Love Contract. Mm-hmm. And Rashida Jones was his sketch partner, and mm-hmm. they're filling out this lengthy contract governing their sexual encounter. So,
right.
You know, I find it really ironic that Saturday Night Live, which is supposed to have some understanding of marginalized cultures and people, and also be kind of a hero in tilting at, you know, the powers that be and fighting the powers that be, would make fun of Antioch for the women taking, you know, taking a stand and trying to raise awareness of their situation. I find that ironic and kind of hurtful.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's all right. I mean, I got the point out, and so I find it kind of funny in a way that they weren't supportive, and, you know, they didn't do a sketch that was supportive of that.
Well, I just hesitated because, again, when I think of Saturday Night Live, I think sometimes humor can be sort of like bathroom type humor, and it's sort of like the old boys network. So I'm not surprised that happened. But we have Michael on waiting to share their wisdom with us. So Michael, are you there?
I'm here, but I'm here to share someone else's wisdom with you.
Okay.
And so there's this, I found out about this fellow only like maybe on Friday. There's a fellow named Daryl Davis. He's a very talented either R&B or jazz musician. He plays keyboards.
Uh-huh.
And he has this side thing he does, which is actually kind of a big deal main thing. He's a black guy, and he befriends like Klan members to the point where there was one exalted, whatever you call him, you know, leader of the Klan, who, after knowing this guy Daryl Davis for a while, quit the Klan and gave Daryl Davis his Klan robes. And I saw Daryl Davis doing a lecture in which he had the Klan robes with him, and he held them up to say, you know, I did this with this guy, and he ended up giving me the Klan robes because we became friends. And so, I mean, I think that's just terrific. Mm-hmm. B, there's a documentary about this that I just started watching that came out in, I think, 2016 called Accidental Courtesy, that you can find, libraries have it, and mm-hmm. there's this app called Canopy that's spelled with a K. If you have a library card, I mean, that's how I'm watching it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Accidental Courtesy, Daryl Davis, Race and America. Yes.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the sort of odd, ironic, and somewhat sad thing is the reason that I found out about it. There's this online journalist named Tim Pool, spelled P-O-O-L, who I listen to on and off. And he and some other people he knows put on a somewhere near Philadelphia an event of just trying to do something to unpolarize this country.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Daryl Davis there as a guest. And Antifa came and tried to shut it down, like in cancel culture manner. Antifa mm-hmm. came to try to shut it down, and they called Daryl Davis, who's black, a white supremacist.
Talk about missing the point.
And this guy Tim Pool had a Daryl Davis on talking about how, like, or, you know, he didn't have him on. Maybe he just read an article in which Daryl Davis was quoted, in which he said that Daryl Davis said that being called a white supremacist was probably the strangest thing he'd ever been called in his whole life, and it totally blew his mind.
Well, I mean, you know. basically they're calling him their idea of a Tom, which again is missing the point. You know, they couldn't be more wrong. They totally missed the point. I thought our purpose in life was to build bridges and to come to an understanding and to lay down our arms. I thought.
Well, me too.
But you know, if comedy can help us do that, then I'm willing to take some pot shots. But if comedy is becoming the lack of humor that what I'm going to assume, and forgive me for assuming, that a primarily white and Antifa response is, that, you know, like, we're missing the point.
Hey,
yeah,
go ahead, Michael.
Let me say one thing about Dave Chappelle's that latest special, which I heard. I tuned in late, but I heard you talking about that. There are people on the left that really don't like that, but I think that one way to look at what he's doing is saying to them, this is what you look like to me, or this is what you look like to a lot of us. So I think there's value in it in that sense of, how far off the deep end does it look like you've gone to so many people?
Hey,
uh-huh.
Hey, thank you so much. We're running short on time, so thank
sure.
you for bringing that up and allowing us to be aware of Daryl Davidson and,
yes.
and that documentary. You are listening to More Talk Radio. Maybe at another time we can talk about how the right wing is can no longer laugh.
Well, that's kind of obvious. The way that everybody scrambled to protect Trump regarding that map of Alabama in Hurricane Dorian's route, and the fact that word came down from on high in the National Oceanic, NOAA, N-O-A-A, word came down from on high not to correct Trump. So, you know, the conservative folks have already lost their sense of humor a long time ago, and they have their own cancel culture, but hopefully we can rise beyond that.
Well, one would hope so, but, you know, one never knows. And think of something funny this week and share it with someone. That might be a way to get started. You have been listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil.
I'm Celeste, and this is your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 along the Columbia River Gorge, in the Willamette Valley, 104.3, and everywhere, KBOO.FM.
Stay tuned for more informative, entertaining, and very good programming.
Yes, indeed. We'll hear you next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:57. Next up, we have at 9 o'clock, we have the Old Mole Variety Hour, which burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time.
How are you?
Then at 10 o'clock, we have Locus Focus,
yes,
followed at 11 a.m. by First Voices Radio. Don't forget that you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. Want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming? Then download our mobile app today.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, featuring artists touring nationally and internationally. Shows start this September with Jim Queskin and Meredith Axelrod. The new season continues with artists Bill Staines, Radim Zenkel, and the Honey Whiskey Trio. Then 2020 kicks off with Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor, followed by Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, Robin and Linda Williams, Pat Donahue, and Joni Harms. Portland Folk Music Society concerts are presented at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and click on Community Events. KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, featuring artists touring nationally and internationally. Shows start this September with Jim Queskin and Meredith Axelrod.
Fire's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh, wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's Giannata sunglasses. Oh, I wish there's Giannata sunglasses. If I's not his sunglasses, then I'd show you messages hiding before your very eyes.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. Buenos dias y bienvenidos. This is Norm Diamond, your host in the Old Mole this morning. You are listening to KBOO-FM in Portland. At the console and in position of power and control is our engineer, Joe Clement. We've got a couple of themes this morning, very interesting themes. Later in the program, we will get to the climate strike upcoming and approach it from the standpoint of place-based education. Before we get there, though, our theme is set by a book that's about to be released. Raymond Caballero has written McCarthyism versus Clinton Jenks, and that book will come out. The Portland launch will be this Thursday at Powell's on Hawthorne. Ray is in the studio with us, Raymond Caballero, author of the new book McCarthyism versus Clinton Jenks. And that gives us the theme for the much of our program. Clinton Jenks, you may not remember, but